Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, this is Evian Whitney of Sex, Love, Liberation, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That with Tina Horn.
Welcome to the 51st episode of Why Are People Into That, the podcast that swan dives into a vault filled with gold coins. My guest this month is my dear friend, the famous porn star, Lorelai Lee. You might have listened to her Interrobang episode about splashing a few months back. So this, right here, is our full-length interview about financial domination and cash fetishism. Part two of our conversation will be out on September 15th. I've been releasing episodes early on my Patreon for my loyal patrons. So if you like the show and you wanna make it rain, check out patreon.com/TINAHORN. All right, everybody, Virgo season is upon us. And as the kids say, it is lit with live events. I am finally keeping tinahorn.net/live better updated, so check that out for all the info that you need on all my live events. And of course, as always, you can follow at tinahornsass on Twitter and Instagram, but you already knew that. Okay, big announcement. Starting this September, I am going to be doing a monthly live Why Are People Into That series at the New York City East Side Pleasure Chest. So on September 7th, my guests are Maisha Battle of the Down for Whatever podcast and Carly, a sex blogger and educator behind the really fabulously named Dildo or Don't blog. Check that out and check out the Down for Whatever podcast. Tickets are available now at tinahorn.net/live, including bottomless Prosecco and 15% off sex toy shopping. I hope I'll see you there, and you can go ahead and mark your calendars for October 5th when we're going to be doing a very special Halloween-themed version of the live podcast, so stay tuned. Now, a few other events I want to just tell you about really quickly. September 14th, also at the Pleasure Chest, I'm hosting the Talk Back at a screening of Aorta Films' new orgy video. So if you liked my interview with them, you will definitely want to come watch some queer porn with us. On September 16th, I'll be presenting a new lecture on polyamory at the House of Yes in Bushwick for Curious Fox Presents Consider This. And on September 23rd at the Brooklyn Sex Expo, I'm doing a live crossover podcast with the great Jacqueline Friedman of Unscrewed, which is both a podcast and now a book. Phew. Okay. So many chances to be in the flesh with me. And one more time, the place to get all of the fine print details and all of the links that you need is always going to be updated at tinahorn.net/live. So it's probably apparent to many of my listeners, but September is my birthday month. I am a serious Virgo, just like Beyonce. And September is also the anniversary of the Pleasure Chest. So 2017 is the 46th anniversary of this legendary sex toy retailer. I'm closer in age to Beyonce, but I hope that when I turn 46 that I look as fantastic as the Pleasure Chest. With shops in New York City, Chicago, and LA, as well as an accessible online store, Pleasure Chest is a pioneer of sex positivity and community education. You can listen to my interview with the National Head of Operations, Sarah Tomchesson, in your Wired People Into That podcast feed. On that episode, Sarah gives advice on how shopping for sex toys can enrich every part of your life. The full lineup of free workshops is always available at pleasurechest.com. Oh, and when you attend one of those awesome events, don't forget to let the Pleasure Chest know that you heard about the workshop on Wired People Into That. And now, put your hands on the back of your neck while I reach into your pocket to take what's mine as we explore Wire People Into Cash.
My NPR voice.
It was great. Feel free to slip in and out of NPR voice.
Okay.
No vocal fry allowed on this podcast.
Don't get me started on teen parlance and it being disparaged.
Did I tell you that at a recent speaking gig, someone came up to me right afterwards? Oh my God, did I tell you this? They showed me their phone. They had made a tally of all the times I had used the word like in a 2-hour presentation. Mm-hmm. And they basically brought it up to me and showed it to me.
Amazing.
And said, you might not be aware of how often you say like. And
who is this person and what are they fucking doing?
I don't know.
That is just grotesque behavior.
I agree. And if they're listening right now, then they obviously don't care about how often I say like, and they listen to my podcast anyway. this has happened to me before, so I do have a prepared retort to that, which is that I'm from California, so it is my cultural heritage. So
yeah, I mean,
back off.
Yeah, that's, I'm also from California in a way, by way of some other places, but have spent, you know, so much of my life there that I very, and in Southern California, and I like just, you know, I have a deep affinity for feminized Southern California rhetoric and it being viewed as evidence that the speaker is less bright. I mean, it's just like anything. It's just like any way of, you know, imposing a hierarchy, and it's bullshit.
Agreed. Yeah. I once heard, do you know the podcast Call Your Girlfriend? Anne Friedman and Aminat Huso, they get a lot of that feedback, pushback, whatever, about vocal fry and how often they say like, and it was very healing for me to hear them say, when someone says that they don't like the way I speak, I have to assume that it's just that they don't like what I'm saying or what I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to delegitimize what I'm saying by policing how I say it.
Yeah, it's just like policing appearance.
Oh, yeah.
It's just doing it on the podcast way.
Yeah.
The radio way.
Well, we solved that.
Okay, check.
Oh, we got a long list. Lorelai Lee.
Yes.
Thanks for coming over to podcast again.
You know, one of my favorite things to do is to hang out with you and say we're going to podcast and then not do it. But yeah, also to do it.
Yeah. No, and no, we're doing it.
Yeah, here we are.
Lorelai is a legendary porn star.
Oh.
/ pornographer, and writer who the title of every piece she's ever written has the word porn in it. So if you just Google porn writing,
it is a funny thing I have noticed that editors, no matter what I name a piece, will insert the word pornography into the title. Yeah, I guess that's a thing that attracts readers.
I mean, it seems to be working. Is there anything else that you do that you want to talk about on the show or promote on the show? You do so much labor organizing, particularly around Prop 60 and the right of porn performers to choose how to make risk or assessments about their safety and health on set.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have taken a step back from doing a lot of that in the last 6 months in order to work on a larger secret project that, you know, will someday be unveiled. But
well, we hope you'll give us that exclusive scoop whenever you release that information to the public.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Cool, me too. Yeah. I'm sure like all kinds of people are quaking in their boots now.
Yeah, you know? I actually also haven't been shooting much lately, and most of my public interaction is, you know, writing rage essays and rage tweets. Yeah, here's the thing I'll say to the public. I'm only on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, yes. Please talk about that.
I've gotten so many emails and things lately from people saying, is this you? Is this you? I'm interacting with this person on Snapchat, on whatever else. Actually, I don't know what the other platforms are. But, you know, I have...
Facebook,
Facebook.
FetLife. Also, various, like, forums that people use to sell their work. Yeah. And people are pretending to be you. And
yeah, it's really, really obnoxious. I am at Miss Lorelei Lee on Twitter and Instagram. And I have a public email address, xoxolorelei@gmail.com, and those are the only places to speak with the actual me.
Good to know.
Yeah.
No, it's very, it's really, it's important, and I'm glad that you're putting that out there, and that sucks.
Yeah, it's so lame. It's so lame. I mean, what can you do?
So, of all the things that we could talk about, mm-hmm. we decided to talk about financial domination today.
Yeah.
Which it seems like perhaps some people are using your persona to financially dominate people.
I have a feeling, yeah.
Which I guess it's cool that people are out there financially dominating people, but if your fans want to give you money, you should definitely be getting that money.
Yeah, and the thing that bothers me is not that I'm not the one getting that money. The thing that bothers me is how are they representing me, right? Just like anybody, we all feel very possessive of our representation,
yeah.
Our public personas and our private personas. Like,
yeah.
You know, somebody's going to say something, and this will be the thing that bothers me the most. Like, I don't care. Get all the money. Take all the money. I give no fucks about that. But don't, like, say words and attribute them to me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's disturbing to be catfished, but I don't think that we talk a lot about how it feels when someone, like, uses your mask to catfish.
Yeah, and it's not, and so it feels really bad when I know that someone's pretending to be me in order to, well, there is another piece of it, right, which is that they are, they're using my labor.
Of course.
To make money.
That's right.
My, you know, the many years that I've put into building up my public persona and, you know, all the many forms of labor that includes. But also what really bothers me is I've heard from at least one female performer who said that that she had received text messages and maybe an email from someone asking for, like, photos. Right? And that really disturbs
that's
me.
That's so wrong.
First of all, like, why would a director write to you asking for photos if you are already on the internet? You know, like, that's one piece of it.
Ooh, that
feels
really,
like, really, like, you just don't ever need to provide that. you know, unless you're like filling out an application online for a company and you know that you're interacting with the, you know, talent manager of that company directly. But no one should be just like texting you, asking you for nudes. It's gross.
Oh, man. Okay. It's, yeah. It's wrong. Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's not me doing it. If anyone texts you and says they're me, they're probably not.
Yeah. You barely text anyone.
It's hard enough to get a text back from me when I know you and love you.
Oh, God. Lorelai.
Yeah.
What the fuck is financial domination?
Okay. Financial domination is when money is given to someone in a dominant role, and the transaction, the handing over of the money, is the turn on.
Right.
So there's many ways that people exchange money during sex, or, you know,
in a relationship,
or as part of other, you know, kinds of sex work. There is often a, you know, financial transaction that happens. That's not necessarily financial domination, although I think we'll talk about the ways that it sometimes is without being named as that.
Right.
But when people are talking about financial domination, they're usually talking about a situation where the person who is in the submissive role is giving cash or a credit card payment or some other thing of value. Sometimes it's buying clothes or jewelry or that kind of thing, and giving it to the person who's in the dominant role. And that is the entire sexual transaction.
Right. So to clarify, there is an explicit definition that the money is not being exchanged for a good or service.
Right.
Although it is a little sort of murky, because it's like, it is in itself the service. So in a way, it is like you are exchanging money for a service, you know, the service that you're doing in exchange for the money is receiving the money.
Yeah, exactly.
And probably in addition to simply receiving the money, creating or maintaining a fantasy or dynamic, or even just projecting a persona and marketing that persona well, so that in order to produce a feeling, a specific kind of erotic feeling or dominant and submissive, you know, power dynamic feeling when that person gives the money.
So this is where it gets complicated. I think the simplest version is somebody gives you money, they are having a turn on, a sexual thrill from giving the money. The person receiving the money may or may not be a professional sex worker, may or may not be a person who is even behaving in a dominant way. I certainly know of plenty of experiences where money is being handed over, and, you know, I've known of this happening in various circumstances that are not all sex work related, but that the handing over the money is the thrill. You can, in addition, have built a persona of being a professional dominant, of being someone who understands all of the facets of financial domination and all of the different kinds of thrills that can be involved in it. And I would consider myself one of those people. And that's work that I've done. But I also know people who have just accepted clothes or valuables of other kinds and been to me like, this guy just like wrote to me on Craigslist and then just like gave me money. And that was cool.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more common than maybe people realize, or that maybe when you put it in these terms, people are like, oh, that's happened to me.
Yeah, I mean, so I also have had the experience many times when I was stripping of feeling like this is what's happening right now.
Right.
Like when I am, you know, dancing over a growing pile of cash. And the way that the cash is handed over is like in this very methodical way where men are clearly deeply enjoying that moment of passing the cash and doing it rhythmically, doing it with in response to some cue, but it is not transactional the same way that other kinds of sex work are transactional, where we've negotiated, you're going to pay me this much. Or even when I dance bachelor parties, like I already got paid to be there to start with. The tipping is another kind of sexy behavior that for me feels like it has all the thrills of financial domination.
For the client slash voyeur slash the person who is handing over the money, like, or also, I mean, I guess my question is about parsing out the thrill of doing the financial domination while at work, because obviously we have to separate the motivation, the like sexual motivation to do sex work, or the like thrill or satisfaction that we get at sex work from, like, we don't have to be turned on in order
to do your job.
Or even like experiencing pleasure or having fun. Like that expectation that you should always be.
Well, and also that is true in relationships, right? Like we often do a thing that doesn't feel, you know, that isn't necessarily one of our desires, internal desires. Sometimes, you know, like when you're dating someone, you will wear an outfit that they like, that you're like, oh, does this look good on me? I don't even know if this looks good on me, but cool, that's working for you. You know, like, not everything is intrinsically self-motivated, right? And that is cool too. That's a separate question. But so to get back to what you were saying, I think that this is complicated. And so for me, I can speak for myself and say that I definitely, the piece of financial domination, or maybe a fetish that is adjacent to financial domination, that is a huge thrill for me, is like fetishizing cash.
Right. Oh man, that's like three questions down. So you just got there already.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about cash fetish. Look at this. Yeah. It says right there, cash fetish. Okay. I'm just underlining it.
And so that is like while I'm financially dominating someone, the thrill that I'm getting is the thrill of cash fetish. And that is distinct from, like, what I'm doing is I will do the behavior of dominating. I will say the words of, you know, you exist only to prop me up. That's the entire reason that you go to work. You're just a pay piggy. You can might as well just sign over your checks to me, etc. You know, the kinds of things that people like to hear. Or there's other ways. That's just one version, right? That's like, but the thing that's thrilling me is not saying those words or behaving in a dominant way, even. The thing that's thrilling me is touching cash and having cash accumulate around me and like rubbing cash on my body.
Smelling cash.
Yes. I mean, there are so many. I could probably go on and on about all the ways that cash turns me on. I love to fuck on it. I love to throw it around the room. I mean, oh, it's so good.
Does it have to be real cash, or can it be Monopoly money?
No, it has to be real.
Okay, I figured so.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that it's, there's so many reasons.
What about coins?
Coins are all right. Coins are better in Europe.
What about, oh yeah. Yeah, well, they're more valuable and they weigh more. Yeah, and they got, like, queens on them and shit.
Yeah.
What about gold? Have you ever fucked on, like...
Never had enough gold. Like, I've never had enough actual gold to have it be a thing. But jewelry is a big deal for me. Like, and definitely having people give me jewelry gives me a similar thrill.
Do you like to fuck while wearing valuable jewelry?
Who doesn't? I mean, Does anybody not love that? I also love to fuck while wearing tons of not valuable jewelry. Which is, like, see, these things are so aligned, though, because it really is so deep. It's so about consumption. It's so about conspicuous consumption. And it's about the symbolism of money and this, you know, what it means and making it meaningless and trying so hard to make it meaningless while also knowing the real power that it holds.
So when you're fucking on a pile of cash, you feel like that is undermining the power that cash has over your life.
It's both, right? You can't, like, you can only ever try to undermine it. And maybe that's why I just keep coming back to this. Like, it will never stop holding power over me.
Yeah.
And that's really deep for me. That's, like, you know, from growing up poor.
Yeah.
And growing up in very class segregated places and seeing wealth, really, like, blatant wealth around me and having no access to it.
Mm.
So to have a pile of cash underneath my naked body that I'm, like, you know, getting dirty. I'm getting this cash dirty.
Also, cash is probably dirty. Oh, it's filthy. Making you and, dirty.
You know, like, I have, there's a thing we do, bachelor parties, right, where we, like, pick up bills with our junk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that is probably really not good for your junk. So I'm just gonna, like,
have you ever gotten like a cash yeast infection?
You know, you can never know for sure the true source, the single source of a yeast infection. You can only guess at such things. I don't remember specifically having a moment where I was like, oh, that's definitely from
that Andrew Jackson's
20s. Yeah. Yeah.
Curse you, Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, man. But that shit is going to change so much once it's the Tubman.
Oh, yeah.
The whole symbolism of it is going to change.
Oh, man.
Because there really is something, too, about the, like, capitalist
picking
patriarchal.
Up a white man yeah. with your pussy?
Yeah.
Picking
yeah,
up a literally. Dead pro-slavery.
A fucking genocidal asshole. I know. Yeah. Yeah, that's all in it.
You know, it's interesting. It makes me, hearing you talk about the way that it's both, makes me sort of think about, like, if you're fucking on a pile of cash, in a way you're worshiping the cash, but you're also undermining its power, I guess, because you're acknowledging that without that worship, the cash is nothing. Like, the cash is just paper. And it's the worship that gives it power.
Yeah, I think that's probably true for many people. For me, worship is never a part of it. I am never...
You're not worshiping the cash.
I'm never worshiping the cash. I am owning it, controlling it, stepping on it.
Mm.
Just, like physically... Like, maybe in this situation, the thing that I'm dominating is money. It's not, like, the person giving me the money.
And the person who's giving you the money is just, like, you're the patron that's providing the material for you.
Yeah. I mean, the person who's giving me the money, that's complicated, too, because the person who's giving me the money... Most frequently, it is a cis straight male in a kind of clothing that makes me interpret them as someone who is upper middle class right. or wealthy.
Right.
And that is important to my enjoyment because it is so, this experience for me is so classed.
Yeah.
That I feel as though they have a kind of social power that I am physically taking from them.
Mm.
And that turns me on.
So you're like closing the wage gap.
And it's not, I would never want to, I wouldn't even put it in those explicit terms.
Yeah.
You know, because that's not what's happening at all. But what we are doing that I feel is real is breaking a kind of rule of classed relationships.
Right.
Where usually, in order for me to take money from these people and how it's been in the past, in order for me to take money from wealthy or upper middle class people, I have done a lot of manual labor to
right.
to get there. So during financial domination, I am not performing the kind of manual labor that I have in the past. I'm not performing manual labor in order to get cash from
What
them.
About emotional labor?
I mean, it really depends on the situation, because that is the beautiful thing about financial domination. When it is most exciting and most satisfying for me is, and this, in its purest form, there is no emotional labor. There's just a handing over.
Right.
There is just a person who feels that this is what they need to do.
Yeah.
They need to give you their money. And sometimes that is associated with a feeling of like competition, of proving that they have the money to give to you.
Right.
Sometimes it's associated with a feeling of humiliation, of I am not worth keeping this thing of value, so I have to give it to you.
Or I have so much guilt about how...
Sometimes about it's classed for them, too.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's about a very gendered idea of the worship of the feminine. And I don't always know what it's about for that person. Because in its purest form, men just have handed me cash or just given
cash
it to me online.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't hear from them before or after.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think that's the thing that has a lot of allure for people when they're looking at it from the outside. They're like, whoa, why? How does that happen? And it feels, and that's what I'm talking about when I talk about like breaking the rules of class and breaking the rules of capitalism, is that that kind of transaction seems totally in opposition to everything we know about economics and about how money works.
And value.
In a capitalist society. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Feel that financial domination is sex work?
I do. I can only speak from my own experience, and I certainly do feel that. And I feel that my status as a sex worker is deep in that transaction, and that also that's what makes it exciting for me, is knowing that my status as a sex worker makes me, for the majority of my interactions with the world, lowers my social status
right.
to the point of facing all kinds of discrimination and violence and, you know, all the shitty shit that goes along with that. And in this transaction, my status is being glorified.
And valorized, yeah.
Yeah. And that's big for me, big part.
So you've already answered this in a lot of different ways, but I want to ask you specifically, why are people into that? Why are people into financial domination? So let's talk about the cash pig first, right? Mm-hmm, the person who wants to be financially dominated, the person who desires to give their money to women or, you know, it's... We can talk about gender again, but in a second, but the person who, in your terms, wants to create that transaction by being the giver. And it, I want to say, and not expecting anything in return, but that's not accurate.
Well, it depends on the person. I mean, I think that but, that's the thing. It really does depend on the person because, like I said, there have been many times when I have never heard from that person again. So what they expect in return is for me to accept the money. Right. That's it.
Right.
It's that pure. Yeah. Or simple. It's not simple, but it is...
straightforward.
Yeah, straightforward, I guess.
Yeah. Clear.
Yeah, clearly defined. Yeah. So then there are other circumstances where people really want to build a whole fantasy world around it.
Right.
Where they really want to be spoken to for a longer period of time about how they're not worthy, about how, like, they're just a vessel for your receipt of the money, like the money goes through them to you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, or about how men exist to be subservient and that we have, and that we, that their handing over them of the money is like undoing, you know, false hierarchy that exists.
Or that it's just the reification of the natural order of things.
Right. So those things can be, those ideas can be happening at the same time.
Right.
Or we can be in an entire fantasy world in which we forget about the patriarchy. And
sounds great.
And the world just exists as such that women are goddesses who deserve all of the cash of men. I mean, it is really...
It's not the cash of men. It is our cash.
Right, right. Yeah. But then, of course, that idea is very based in, like, the gender binary and the, like, you know, these ideas of what a man is and what a woman is that are real, like, traditional. Mm. So even while we're doing this thing that supposedly... It's like second wave feminism, right? It's like,
oh, my God.
Well, because it's like this idea... So frequently, you know, there's this meme that, like, with the brains and the brains lighting up and then the brain explodes.
Uh-huh.
And it's like we're on the second brain, you know, where you're like
second wave, second brain.
Yeah, where you're like, oh, realizes that patriarchy exists. Oh, thinks the correct response to patriarchy is to do the opposite of what patriarchy is telling you.
Mm. And then the brain exploding is what?
The brain exploding is like, oh, like.
Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want. Create a new world order. Mm. Like, make your decisions not based on any reactiveness to traditional hierarchies.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm going to remember that. It's like, it was so, like, for an example would be, like, the first brain is, like, that you learn that you are female and so you have to shave your legs in order to be a female in society. And then the second brain is, I could just have hairy legs. And then that would be fighting the idea that I have to shave my legs.
That's what revolution looks like.
Right. Right. And then the explodey brain is like, I can do whatever I want with my legs.
Yeah. Like, well, and that the way my body looks is not necessarily connected to what my gender is and the way that I present my body and what my gender is can have any kind of alignment that don't necessarily have a responsiveness to traditional ideas of what gender is or traditional expectations of what you're supposed to do if you are a certain gender.
And also, I think the explodey brain stage is the one where you realize that you're no more... That, like, not shaving your legs is great, but that then policing other people who do shave their legs...
I mean, that's where it gets, really.
...is actually sending you... back to the original brain.
Yeah, that's where it gets... That's why it's even worth talking about this. Is right. Because all too frequently, when people get to the not shaving my legs is revolution part, they're like, and those people who are shaving their legs are anti-revolution.
Right, counter-revolutionary, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that is so frustrating.
Totally. Well, okay. So why are people into financial debt? So what is on the mind of the cash pig? Okay. So number one, some cash pigs, worship women, mm-hmm. Bringing gold coins to the temple is a good way to worship a woman, to worship a female goddess. Show your tribute, to make a sacrifice.
Right.
Because when you give away your money, then you no longer have that money.
Yeah.
Maybe for some of them, they feel some guilt, whether they understand this explicitly or not, that they understand that they have some guilt, some patriarchal guilt, that they have more money than they know what to do with, and so they're like, want to try to equalize things. Maybe for some of them, it is a sort of twisted power dynamic where they are showing off their status because they're like showing, like, I could just give $100, $1,000, jet plane,
that happens baby, most...
to somebody, and I and I'll be fine. Yeah. I could just buy this lady a diamond ring, and like, we won't even be any sweat off my sack.
And so that is, I think that comes back to the idea of trying to devalue money, of feeling like you are playing with the power that money holds, and also that happens oftentimes in conjunction with people being turned on. And this has happened to me often at bachelor parties too, of men being turned on by their interactions with other men.
Interesting.
And that is such a dynamic that is under-acknowledged, I think.
Well, if we acknowledge it too much, that might, you know, blow the cover.
Right, we don't want to blow their cover. We want
the homosocial cover.
Yeah, continue to do it so that we can reap the rewards of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's so interesting. So in a way, they're sort of like being like exhibitionist.
Well, so they're competing for your attention. They're being exhibitionist. They're trying to be the most malest of males sometimes. But also, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Like, if I'm in a room full of men who are handing me their money, oftentimes it's like, I'm peripheral to their experience, which is, like, their experience is, like, that their cohort, their like male cohort, is like viewing them as virile, you know, and they're doing that for each other.
Oh my god. It's really fucking interesting.
Oh, I love it. I get such, like, I mean I don't know, maybe I get joy out of it because I feel like I have some kind of control of the room. My experience of being me knowing that me being there is peripheral to their experience is like when you're reading a book and you just have all the clues that the protagonist doesn't have, and you're like, you know what I mean? You're like,
I mean, that is called dramatic irony. That's what dramatic irony is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, an example of dramatic irony, the classic / classical example of dramatic irony is that, everybody in the audience knows that Oedipus is fucking his mom, but Oedipus doesn't know it's his mom. Yeah. So when Oedipus is like, you know, like going to bed with her, we're all like, no, you know, and when he kills his dad, he doesn't know it's his dad, but we know it's his dad. So our experience of it is based, is, and like the tragedy, that's what tragic irony is. Like, the tragedy is that we know and he doesn't. Yeah. And if we could just tell him, but we can't.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thrill that I'm having, where I'm not, like, thrilled that this exists and that, you know, male competition and like this idea of masculine virility as like a
is such a motivator
at the top of the social hierarchy like exists, right? But just that I am, that they have no idea how much I see, right? And that's sort of also some of, there's like a thrill of objectification in that, where like being objectified, again, is this thing where I'm like, I know what you're doing. And also I know all the other things about who I am, you know, and that I'm a whole person. And so when it works, it's like, it works because we all know this is a fiction, or because I know this is a fiction. We all, meaning all the people who are important, which is me, in that room.
That rules. You know, this reminds me of the episode that the Wire People into Gangbangs episode, where Madeline and Will, who you know very well, it was Will specifically who was talking about who was telling the story of one of the women that he has worked with, who was doing the gangbang. So she was the bottom, you know, playing the role of the bottom in the gangbang, and she was talking about how she really loves to like rub the dicks together a little extra in her mouth.
Oh yeah, exactly. Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. Yeah, speaking of Madeline, I mean, we should probably acknowledge that Madeline and I have done this sort of fantastically together.
Yeah.
And famously, in fact, she got a ton of press.
Yeah. So let's talk about Concrete Detail. Because I know you love Concrete Detail, but also apparently I think that you might be a closet theory lover as well.
Oh, no, not me.
I got you on the mic. So there is this picture that has hung for a long time at the San Francisco Armory. I'm assuming that it has been taken down. Yeah. That is a photograph of you and Maitresse Madeline Marlowe, who's been a guest on this show before, talking about Why Are People Into Gangbangs. There's two versions of it. There's one where you're wearing latex outfits, mm-hmm. and there's one where you're wearing sort of severe business attire.
Yeah.
Like pencil skirts, blouses, that kind of thing. And so the one that that hangs in the armory is the sort of severe business attire one. And you are lounging mm-hmm. on top of $42,000 in cash. Oh, it's 84, right? It's both of your money commingling. Yes. So it's $84,000 in cash. Real cash. Looking up at the camera, so the camera, the photographer is like on a ladder, and there's also some cash like raining down on you, and you guys have in that picture like briefcases, maybe.
Yeah, I think we have a briefcase and a whip.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is the story behind that picture?
So the story is that Madeline. You know, Madeline has an expertise on fetishes, obviously, and on taking cash and on financial domination.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways to do financial domination is through a public auction, because it's visible. What the amount of money that the men are putting down is visible. Very similar to the strip club, or I have not worked in a strip club, so I shouldn't say that, but similar to the bachelor party.
Right.
But
also in a strip club.
I mean, you know, I just don't want to speak on something that I don't.
Sure.
Don't feel like an authority on.
Have you been to a strip club?
Sure. Of course I've been to a strip club, but that certainly does not make me an authority on strip clubs. Although you wouldn't know that from the number of journalists writing articles about their visit to the strip club.
Ooh, sick burn.
Okay. So we had this auction.
I do want to say that the idea of the auction really supports your claim that part that for not always but sometimes the motivation behind giving money, you know, being a financial domination bottom, being a financial submissive,
mm-hmm.
that's yes. the word for that, is exhibitionism and wanting yes. wanting to be seen potentially even by not the object of your lust, right? The woman,
right.
but being seen, you know, if you will, homosocially
yeah.
by your peers,
yeah.
And being like validated, you know, perhaps again, like because of status, because of perhaps like a desire to be validated by other men, and also maybe as like a pecking order kind of like also competition
yeah.
with other men or yeah. like yeah,
yeah absolutely.
Pissing contest. Anyway, so go on. So public auction.
So
great way to do that.
We were auctioning off a webcam show.
Right.
It was a 1-hour webcam show so the first auction was with Madeline, and the winner of that auction paid $42,000.
So technically this is an example of financial domination existing within the framework of a specific kind of sex work, right? So technically that person was exchanging money, or the terms of the transaction were, you are going to give, you know, the winner of the auction will pay whatever they pledge in exchange for a 1-hour custom cam show.
So this wouldn't have been financial domination if someone had paid the money and received the cam show.
Right.
That was not, not necessarily. I mean, right.
It would be an
It could just depends. It depends on the person who's paying, right? The people who are putting down that money might have all different motivations, and they might just really want a cam show.
Right.
And the handing over the cash might not be so important to them. But the reason that the auction works is because of these financial domination factors,
right,
that many of the people who will be attracted to that form of paying for something are going to be attracted to it for all the reasons we just described. And in the end, the person who ended up paying for it did not want a cam show. They simply wanted to hand over money.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it still possible that that person could show up and say, I would like to redeem my credit?
Well, I mean, at this point, that would be very difficult for anybody involved. It's been a number of years since this.
Yeah, like four or five years?
I think it was 2014 and 2015.
Okay. And it's 2017 now.
It's 2017 now. Maybe it was both in 2014. Both of the auctions. So the end of the story is that then...
Please go on.
A few months after the first auction... I held an auction as well, and the same person paid $42,000 and was the winner of that auction.
I also just want to say that the status of this as financial domination is complicated for me by the fact that you put the labor of marketing mm-hmm. the auction into the transaction. Now, I'm not trying to be like this, I'm going to tell you it wasn't financial domination, but like it obviously is something that can, because it's a transaction of currency, it can go along and seems like it maybe even sort of naturally goes along with like other forms of labor, particularly sexual labor, right? So just like we don't want to discount the fact that, you know, if someone is paid $300 for a 1-hour session, they're not just getting paid for the labor of being present and their time and being present in that session. They're also being paid for however much time they put into marketing, into corresponding with the client, into maintaining their persona, into the photo shoots that they had to do, into
yeah.
like all the times that they have to go to the gym or get Botox, like, you know,
yeah,
like all of these, you know, and the like money that they spend on makeup and the money that they spend on the outfits and
yeah.
like all of that different stuff.
I think I was trying to acknowledge that in my definition, that it is it can take all different forms.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about it in a professional situation,
right,
again, that's going to be a different form than just, you know, people who are maybe doing financial domination. What's funny about it is, like, is it always sex work, right? Because right. people might be handing over cash to someone who does not otherwise do sex work. Is right. that sex work? I could hear arguments either way.
Totally, same.
So I definitely said this in interviews after we had these public auctions.
And it got a lot of press. And people seem to really, even as recently as a follow-up to Maureen O'Connor cover story in New York Magazine, she wrote she had a separate interview with Madeline
yeah.
about how bizarre she felt it was. You know, this has gotten yeah. like plenty of press already, but yeah. people seem to really continue to be like, $42,000 for nothing.
Right, right. And that's what I said to one of the reporters, is that this was not for nothing. This was for, you know, 10 years of my work building up my public persona and creating all kinds of performances.
And also, what if someone is willing to give that money, then it's not nothing.
And again, for me, this is very linked also to, you know, my status as a sex worker. Like I said, I don't think this is always true about financial domination, but for me, oftentimes I feel that growing up poor and being a sex worker now is the way that I earned that money. Like, fucking experiencing in many different ways the feeling of lack.
Mm.
Yeah. And not just the feeling of lack, but the social stigma of not having money.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's different struggles around when you don't have money, and some of them have to do with your social status, and some of them have to do with just the very practical situation of not having money. That's really very deeply a part of that transaction for me that I can't untangle or know whether that is a part of it for other people, but it is so deeply a part of it for me. It yeah. is like a very deep motivator. And I feel like I am receiving power when I receive that money, that power that I specifically felt the lack of at many times in my life, you know? Yeah. And so when we talk about financial domination, I mean, one thing that we haven't maybe explicitly said, but I think have probably said a lot of ways, is that we are just talking about power exchange.
Yeah.
And money holding power, symbolizing power, being, and it being literally exchanged.
Thanks for listening to episode 51. Follow at Tina Horns Ass on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to the show on Acast, iTunes, etc. And please take a few seconds to write a review and tell your friends about the show. Visit wirepeopleintothat.com to subscribe to our newsletter and listen to the entire archive. As ever, Wire People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme song is by Vivid Windows from Oakland, California, and this project is supported in part by my generous Cash Piggy patrons. Close that wage gap by pledging patreon.com/TINAHORN. Until next time, I'll be obsessively smoothing out bills and making sure they all face the same direction in my drawer.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.